as well. And thanks so much for joining us. I'll be speaking at the Lensic Theater in Santa Fe on October 17th, on Friday night, as they show the new film on Democracy Now! Called Steal This Story, Please!, and then on Saturday and Sunday in Woodstock and Saugerties. Check our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
When they separated families, we took them to court and won. When they limited access to essential health care, we fought the bans and won. And now they're determined to reverse more of our hard-won rights and freedoms. But if they try to take away our rights, they've got to get past us. We are the American Civil Liberties Union, and we will fight any attempts to roll back our rights in the courts, in state legislatures, and in the streets.
When you're surrounded by oppressive laws, you can't just sit back and be oppressed. You get up and fight. And all of us at the ACLU are fighting for you.
Right now, the ACLU's work is more important than ever. The ACLU is fighting in the courts and advocating in all 50 states to ensure that all of us can exercise our rights. To learn more about ACLU's work defending our civil liberties, go to myaclu.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM. And 107.3 FM. Right? That hasn't changed. Okay, so we are here on a Tuesday evening. It's 6 o'clock. It's time for another edition of Off the Wall. very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein over here. Kyle is not over there like he usually is. Instead, he's over here. Kyle, are you there?
Hello.
Wow.
Hi.
You sound decidedly different this week. And that's because you are in the great state of Florida. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on a panhandle.
So what I should point out to people is that this is the way people in Florida sound. They sound a bit tinny, and there's a decided hum in the background. That's one of the reasons why I choose to live in New York. I just can't stand the hum. But how is it down there? Kyle, that was a question. How is it down there? Kyle's not speaking. Well, we heard him. We heard him for a second. Kyle, are you still with us? Well, this is mysterious. All right. Well, you know what? I'm going to leave you up. If you come back, that's great. But we don't hear you. Hit a touch tone if you hear me. How about that? That way we know that there's at least a connection. I hear the hum, so... weird. Okay, well, I'm glad we got to hear Kyle for a little bit. He's in Florida where weird things apparently happen without any kind of predictability. We've been away, actually, for the last couple of weeks. There hasn't even been a show. So we're back after what was rather a sad trip that we had to take. Kyle, you still there? I thought I heard a noise. Okay. I don't know what's going on. I'm going to leave him up just for a little while longer. But yeah, we had to take a trip out to Whitehorse to visit our good friend Greg, who is, he has stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and we wanted to see him at least one more time. And it was a good visit. We'll talk more about it on Off the Hook tomorrow. It just involved a lot that I just didn't want to do radio. You know what I mean? It's a couple of weeks where we just wanted to focus on the people. And oftentimes we're able to do that. We're able to incorporate that. We just didn't want to do it this time. So I hope you understand that. We do have plenty to talk about, including our travel adventures, which... if Kyle can't speak now from Florida, I can certainly narrate the various things that happened to us. But basically, we were in order to get to Whitehorse, which is in the Yukon in Canada, you have to take at least three flights. And what we did was we took a flight from Newark to Montreal, and then the idea was to take a flight from Montreal to Vancouver, and then from Vancouver to Whitehorse. That's really the quickest way you can do it. However, we had a slight issue with the airline because what they did is they flew us up to Montreal and they left us exactly 1 hour to connect to their next flight. It was all the same airline. Now, I don't know if you know this, but when you go to Montreal, you're entering another country. And when you enter another country, you have to go through customs. Now, this is maybe what they didn't know, is that there are other people doing that at the same time. Thousands of them. Maybe even more than that. But the whole thing isn't helped when the airline can't park its own damn plane, because there was another plane in the gate that was sitting there. Same airline, just sitting in the gate, double parked. I don't know what was going on. Maybe the guy was, you know, at the bar. Who knows? We were sitting on the plane saying, hey, you know, we have an hour to get to our next flight. In fact, we had less time than that. We had 45 minutes because they closed the gate 15 minutes before the plane leaves. Now, I have to point out the airline made all these arrangements. We didn't say, hey, it would be a good idea to catch a flight really tight to the flight that's coming in. It'll be a bit of an adventure. No, that was their planning. And so we basically were sitting on the tarmac waiting for this other plane to move its ass out of our gate. And by the time they finally did that, it was, we had 25 minutes before the plane left. Unbeknownst to us at the time, we only had 10 minutes because the gates closed 15 minutes before. So there we were in Montreal's airport, hightailing it through various lines. We were able to cut through lots and lots of people, thanks to the airport staff, but it didn't really help. We got through customs, breezed through that really quickly, and then made our way back to the gate, only to find out the plane had left already. By the time we got there, it was a quarter after when the plane was supposed to take off. So, you know, when things like that happen, you think that the airline would take responsibility. They did not. They took no responsibility. They said, it wasn't our fault. It's an airport issue. And how is an airport issue when it's your own plane that's blocking another one of your own planes? That's beyond me. But let's just say we're in further discussions about this. So that resulted in pretty much a 24-hour delay in what we were doing, which was not what we wanted to do at all. And since we had made other plans all along the way of various other flights coming back and trains and things like that, it affected so many things. And, well, again, we have to discuss some compensation, because they have not given us one penny at this point for that. All right, Kyle, this is your last chance to say anything. Otherwise, I'm disconnecting now. No, he's not there. That's unfortunate. But we'll figure out what went wrong. We did hear him. We heard him, and it was good hearing his voice. He'll be back next week. All right, so we had a pretty amazing time seeing our friend, visiting Whitehorse. We happened to be there, amazingly enough, on Reconciliation Day, which is an annual event where people devote time to the horrors that took place directed at the indigenous community in Canada, something we really should do here in the United States, but we would rather whitewash our history than learn from it. What we saw was incredibly moving in many places, on television. We heard it over the radio, but I think the thing that that really got us the most was I'm sorry, the phone's off the hook now. Hang on, I gotta reach over the studio. Hang up the phone. Okay. We passed by an elementary school in the middle of Whitehorse, and all the kids had written out these little Valentine-shaped cards in the shape of hearts, basically saying every child matters, what happened was wrong. You know, just basically these simple messages of sympathy, understanding, knowledge. It's what school should be all about. Here, you know, you do something like that and all of a sudden it becomes controversial. There, it's not. It doesn't make anybody a bad person, at least not in this day and age. It certainly doesn't make children into bad people. It makes them into educated people, because we spoke to so many individuals throughout Canada. But I think one of the most interesting people we spoke to was actually in a dispensary in Whitehorse. And, you know, we get so bent out of shape about dispensaries in our country, particularly here on Long Island, particularly here in Suffolk County or in Brookhaven, to be specific. It's basically somebody's ringing the phone. Really? Is that you? I can't reach across the studio. I can't do that. I can't even see if it's you. So, yeah, this is not a good time for that. Wow. So basically, they have dispensaries. I'll just do the show with the phone ringing. I can do that. I can do that. Basically, we went to this dispensary right there on the main street in Whitehorse, you know, next to other regular stores. It just says cannabis, and you know, it's not a big deal. You don't get in if you're underage. They don't sell anything to people underage. It's a normal part of life, though. And we had this great discussion with one of the employees there about all of this, about Reconciliation Day, about Canada, about the United States. And I was just amazed at how well-informed this random person was. And I realized that seems to be the case with almost everybody we spoke to in Canada. You just wanted to keep talking to them because they had so much to say and so much knowledge to draw from, because they're paying attention. And if you really want an example of this that you can access right now, I'm loath to do this because I don't want people to tune away from WUSB ever. We have a radiothon coming up at the end of the month, so, you know, I hope your checkbooks are ready for that. But, listening to the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which you can do on any of the apps that you might use to listen to radio, you can listen to CBC. It's not restricted or anything like that. They have no commercials. They are always talking about one thing or another or playing music from all different parts of the country. You will learn so much in the course of a few hours, and you'll see what I mean as far as people just being well-spoken, open to criticism, open to learning more, open to being better people, you know, and that's what it's all about. That's really what I think we got out of that. So, yeah, the whole thing was interesting. It was really amazing. We wound up hanging out in Vancouver for a day, which is another incredible city. Not without its problems, though, because there are a lot of people doing drugs on the street because it's not really a criminalized offense. Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be treatment for the people there, and just a lot of people are abusing drugs right out in the open. Not getting arrested, not getting sent into institutions. So, I mean, that's good, but it's also bad in that they're not getting help. And you will pass crowds of people in various parts of town, not everywhere. But the good things about the city, it's very cosmopolitan, open late, very busy, and the kind of thing I like. And we took a train from Vancouver down to Seattle, which was also the way to go, I think. Planes just, you know, they're so stressful. They really are. Flying into Vancouver, we were hitting all kinds of turbulence. This is something that the flight attendant said as we were coming in for a landing, experiencing all this turbulence. He said, make sure we're coming in for a landing right now. In the event of evacuation, leave all your possessions behind. Why would you say that as the plane is coming in for a landing, talking about evacuation at that point, unless you were really worried about something? So that didn't put anybody in a calm state of mind as we were approaching the ground. But suffice to say, we made it, and we're able to hang out in Vancouver, take the train to Seattle, hang out in Seattle, help the Mariners win. Yeah, you know, all it takes is a couple of extra people rooting them on, and that's enough. So, you know, the curse might be over finally. And I'm not saying Kyle and I are the ones that put them over the top, but, you know, we have been saying repeatedly, Seattle is the only team, the only existing team that has never made it to the World Series. Every other team, they haven't won, but they have made it to the World Series. Even the old Seattle Pilots, does anybody remember them? Well, they exist for one season. Well, they became the Milwaukee Brewers. They made it to the World Series. They've never won the World Series. So Seattle seems to have had some kind of a curse, but this time they're ahead 2-0 in the series with Toronto, which surprised me, winning in Toronto. Now they're heading back to Seattle. You know, I think they're in this year. So that's good. That's something. Then we took a train back from Seattle to Chicago. And again, the thing is, when you take Amtrak cross-country and you have a sleeper, you basically, you're treated like royalty, except for the room, which can be really, really cramped. But apart from that, you basically have all your meals taken care of, and you wind up meeting such interesting people. We talked to this one woman who is a student at a university in North Dakota, as we were passing through Minnesota. And she was telling us about her triple major and all the various things that she was studying. And one of the things, and this only came out at the end of our conversation, I'm glad it did, she was studying basically a Native American culture and trying to empower it more so that there was more media, exactly the kinds of things that we've been talking about. And we found this kindred spirit just randomly at the table, and basically talked about various things that they do in Canada, things they could be doing here, and her hopes and aspirations. And it was very inspirational to us, and I hope to her as well. In Chicago, we did something different. Kyle got on a train called the Floridian, which is a combination of an old train called Capital Limited and the Silver Star, which Capital Limited went from Chicago to D.C., Silver Star went from New York to Miami. What they did was they merged them, That way there's one less train going through the tunnel in New York, which apparently they want now as they're doing construction. So he got on the Floridian and is down in Florida now, as we heard earlier. That train took two nights. My train, which I was on at the same time as he was, is the Lakeshore Limited. That went from Chicago to Moynihan in New York City. And his was the better train. He talked to some really interesting people there. He'll tell you about that at some point, I'm sure. I got to speak to some really interesting folks as well, including one guy from Massachusetts. We had a good conversation for a while. Then I asked him, you know, so what line of work are you in? And he said, well, you know, if I tell you that, you're going to know my family has a lot of bodies buried. I got to think about that for a minute. Is this guy a hitman? And I said, you're an undertaker, aren't you? And sure enough, he was an undertaker. I was speaking to an undertaker for a half hour without realizing it. Most pleasant guy in the world. You never would have guessed. Of course, you know, I'm not saying undertakers aren't pleasant. Why wouldn't they be pleasant? But it is rather a different line of work. Other people, too, I met along the way, you know, including people that come from completely different backgrounds. This one couple had a son in upstate New York who worked for the Border Patrol. Not ICE specifically, but this guy was on the border dealing with people coming in and trying to smuggle things. And, you know, at times like that, we're good listening. And not so much spouting our opinions and what we think everything means, but listening to how other people see it. And in this particular case, it was pretty interesting. You know, there were cases where at the border, Tijuana and San Diego, there were people bringing fentanyl in, and it was caught. And you open something, and it's fentanyl. You know, you have to get away from that. You have to wear masks. And that's a concern when you're somebody who works there. So it was interesting hearing that from the perspective of the parents. Good conversation, and if you're able to listen, I think you can learn a lot as well. Anyway, so that was our trip. I can't believe we did all that in 2 weeks, but we did. A lot going on here, a lot going on back in the States. Where do we begin? Okay, No King's Day is coming up this Saturday. All throughout the country, I think there's, 2,500-plus demonstrations planned, rallies, whatever you want to call them. Okay, here's what we have here in Long Island. Now, the No King's Day, this is basically demonstrations against what Trump is doing. And we'll get into what Trump is doing in just a moment. But you all know what he's doing. Okay, well, let's start out east. I'll tell you, in Hampton Bays, this is all Saturday, this coming Saturday. This is from 11:30 to 1 p.m. The No Kings rally will be at Macy's Hampton Bays parking lot. Parking lots are great for rallies. In Riverhead, the Riverhead County Center, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. A bit early, but that's how it goes sometimes. Wading River, North Shore United Methodist Church, from 12 to 3 p.m. In Shirley, 12 p.m. to 1:30 p.m., and I don't have an address on that one, I'm sorry. But something's going on in Shirley, just listen for the chanting, you'll find them. In Medford, the Park and Ride near Exit 63, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. In Port Jefferson Station, the Train Car Park. Actually, you know, that's called Resistance Corner. At least I call it that. I know some Civic Association people got bent out of shape that it was being called that, but so what, you know? We call it what we want. Don't have to be nice. anyway, it's the Train Car Park. It's where that train is there for some reason, on the corner of 347 and 112. Don't go in the train, by the way. They really don't like that. Anyway, that's taking place from 11 a.m. until 1:30 p.m. South Huntington, at the corner of Jericho Turnpike and Walt Whitman Road, from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Let's take a look into Nassau County, because I know we have some listeners there. Nassau County Courthouse in Mineola from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. In Forest Hills, actually that's in Queens. We don't have a complete list here, and that's changing by the hour. In Forest Hills, McDonald Park from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. The Rockaway Beach Amphitheater in Rockaway, 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. Grand Army Plaza in Brooklyn, 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Father Duffy Square in Manhattan, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., West 125th Street and Amsterdam Avenue, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m., 2:30 p.m., that is. And that's just a small bit of what's planned. And the other ones will break out. Other ones will happen. Go to the website nokings.org, nokings.org, and you can see where they are in your state, in your community, and you can start your own as well. It's really that simple. All right, so you may have heard about this. Pete Hegseth, the head of the Defense Department, or as he prefers to call it, the War Department, has been threatening to revoke press credentials of news organizations that don't adhere to a Soviet-style type of restriction, where basically they have to get permission before they cover news stories about the Pentagon. otherwise, they don't get access. They get no more access. More than three dozen news organizations have said they are refusing to sign on to these requirements. Now, according to the Defense Department's press office, and we will continue to call it the Defense Department, which outlined the rules last month, reporters covering the Pentagon must sign a pledge not to obtain or use unauthorized material, even if the information is unclassified. And if they do not, they will be banned from the Pentagon. I'm shaking in my boots. so basically, in something that I think is unprecedented, Pete Hegseth has united the media. Fox is joining the rest of legacy media in pushing back against his radical press censorship policy. That's what Chuck Todd, formerly of NBC's Meet the Press, said. Here is a list. Here's a list of the networks that are refusing to sign this requirement. ABC, Associated Press, The Atlantic, Aviation Week, wow, good on them. Axios, Bloomberg News, Breaking Defense, CBS News, CNN, Defense Daily, Defense News, Defense One. That's a lot of defense. The Economist, Federal Times, The Financial Times, WUSB, Fox News, The Guardian, The Hill, HuffPost, Military Times, MSNBC, NBC News, The New York Times, Newsmax. Yeah, whoa. Newsmax? Really? Newsmax did something good? Okay. News Nation, NPR. Yeah, take that. PBS NewsHour. Yeah, they're fighting back finally. Politico, Real Clear Politics, whatever that is. Reuters, Task and Purpose. Task and Purpose? That's a news network? Okay. The Wall Street Journal, The Washington Examiner, The Washington Post, The Washington Times. Washington has three newspapers? Okay, I'm sure not all of them are printed, but okay. The Examiner, The Post, and The Times. And WTOP, which is a TV station and a radio station. So, yeah, you know, they're all uniting, and good for them, finally, standing up and saying, no, we're not going to take this. Because what we've been seeing a lot of recently is the mass media basically bowing down and being afraid to stand up to all these crazy restrictions and just intimidation tactics. Many times these intimidation tactics are basically aimed at the corporations that own their particular networks. And we've seen, unfortunately, this happen to networks like CBS, ABC, a bunch of others. It's really sad. I want to play you something, though. This is from a Democratic strategist who was recently on CNN. Her name is Maria Cardona, and she has very interesting perspectives, viewpoints, and is somebody who stands up to this kind of thing. And I just want to play what it is that she said on the air, and let's all keep our fingers crossed that this will actually work.
They're being baited into interactions that can justify action.
Look, let's remember that protesting peacefully is a right that we all have as American citizens, Audie. And one of the things that we cannot lose sight of here is the egregious violations of civil rights that ICE is involved in every single day in so many communities. They are not there to keep the peace. They are there, I believe, to incite these protests that Donald Trump is now using as an excuse to bring in the federal troops. ICE is violating American citizens' rights. They are detaining American citizens for days on end. So the focus of ICE is not to deport violent, criminal, undocumented immigrants. In fact, the vast majority of immigrants that they have detained have absolutely no criminal record. And on top of that, they are detaining American citizens as well. Yes.
But is it a good strategy to antagonize ICE, right? Follow ICE, take a lot of videos. Like, there is an argument that the administration is making that this is itself the threat.
As long as they are not, these protesters or the people who are videotaping the ICE agents are not physically attacking the ICE agents, absolutely it's within their right, Audie. It's the only way that Americans are aware of these massive violations of civil rights that ICE agents are involved in. The images, these videos are the ones that are telling us, look at what they're doing. They're slamming women, children, you know, on the floor, separating families. They attacked a priest, for God's sake, a reverend. They attacked him, shooting pellets at him. I mean, these things are egregious, audience. We cannot lose sight of that. Again, the protests and these videotaping have to be peaceful, but that is absolutely within the right of American citizens to do that, to show the world these massive violations of civil rights by ICE.
All right. You guys.
Wow. And, that was very well said, very well presented, and not compromising in any way when challenged about, well, is it nice? Are you hurting the feelings of these ICE agents? You have the right to protest. You have the right to express yourself. And she drew the line at attacking violence, obviously. We all know this. But I wanted to read a tweet that she posted a little earlier today, I believe. This might have been yesterday. A very important point I made at CNN this morning. ICE is engaging in egregious criminal behavior, violating people's civil rights, kidnapping, and snatching innocent men, women, and children off the streets, even detaining American citizens. While doing it, not identifying themselves, hiding their faces, not telling people why they are being taken. This is not normal. This is not American. This is not acceptable. And videotaping these agents, asking them questions, and even hollering that they should not be doing this does not in any way constitute a violent attack against these agents. It is part of the Constitution to peacefully protest violent behavior against innocent people and American citizens. So keep those videos coming, amigos. You know, that statement was so moving, so stirring, so thought-provoking, that it even got a response from the Department of Homeland Security. Yeah. It's proof that if you say something, you can actually reach somebody and make a difference. If they're human. But if they're part of this administration, don't hold your hopes up. Because this is the response to what I just read from the official DHS.gov Twitter account. What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things Americans have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent statement were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone is now dumber for having listened to it. Can you believe that's the official voice of DHS now? It sounds like you're in a Reddit debate with a sixth grader. It's unbelievable. It goes on. Far from engaging in criminal behavior, federal law enforcement actions have significantly reduced crime in the cities we have been deployed to. Locking up criminals works. Imagine that. Well, we may never know who wrote that, but to actually try and take credit for reduced crime in cities, that has been the case for the last year or even longer, is insane. Because that is not why crime has been reduced. These are the arguments that have been used time and time again when Trump sends the military into our own cities, that crime rate has gone down. Well, now they're going to try and claim credit for that, too. Let's look at a couple of things ICE has been up to. Chicago man fined $130 by ICE agents for not carrying identification. Yeah. A legal Chicago resident spoke exclusively with NBC Chicago after receiving a $130 fine from immigration agents during recent Border Patrol operations in Rogers Park. The document shows the fine was issued for not carrying identification, something rarely seen in the city. Ruben Antonio Cruz, 60 years old, originally from El Salvador, said he was sitting with a friend near Clark Street and Lunt Avenue when immigration agents suddenly pulled up in front of them. I was looking at my phone when they got out and asked, "Do you have your papers?" I told them yes, but they were at home, that I could show them if they wanted. Cruz, who suffers from heart problems and lives in a government-subsidized apartment, said agents placed him in their vehicle, drove around the neighborhood, and questioned him before verifying his identity. The agents eventually confirmed he is legally in the country, but gave him a $130 citation for not having his documents on him. This is the kind of thing you'd read about in some dictatorship someplace. But it is true, under federal law, permanent residents must carry their registration card with them at all times. But guess what? People make mistakes, and you don't treat them this way. And legal experts say that this rule has been very rarely enforced until now. This incident happened last Thursday. As of late Monday, DHS had not commented on the case or on the practice of issuing fines to legal residents for not carrying their identification. There was a piece in today's Newsday that basically was about ICE's use of full-body restraints during deportations and the accusations of inhumane treatment that that brings up. A Nigerian man described being grabbed with other detainees in September in the middle of the night. ICE officials clasped shackles on their hands and feet and told them they were being sent to Ghana, even though none of them were from there. When they asked to speak to their attorney, the officers refused and straitjacketed the already shackled men in full-body restraint suits called the RAP, then loaded them onto a plane for the 16-hour flight to West Africa. This is what's happening. It's referred to as the burrito or the bag, and the RAP has become a harrowing part of deportations for some immigrants. It was just like a kidnapping, the Nigerian man, part of a federal lawsuit, thank God, told the Associated Press in an interview from the detainment camp in which he and other deportees were being held in Ghana. Like others placed in the restraints, interviewed by the AP, he spoke on the condition of anonymity for fear of reprisals. In Ghana, and still fearing reprisals from our government here in the States. The AP has identified multiple examples of ICE using the black and yellow full-body restraint device in deportations. Get ready for it to be used on the rest of us. It was described to the AP by five people who said they were restrained in the device, sometimes for hours, on ICE deportation flights dating back to 2020. And witnesses and family members in four countries told the AP about its use on at least seven other people this year. The AP found ICE has used the device despite internal concerns voiced in a 2023 report by the Civil Rights Division of its parent agency, good old DHS, in part due to reports of deaths involving use of the RAP by local law enforcement, and the AP has identified a dozen fatal cases in the last decade where local police or jailers around the U.S. used the RAP, and autopsies determined restraint played a role in the death. Another man interviewed by the Associated Press said ICE officers put him in the RAP after he initially resisted efforts to move him onto a deportation flight in Alexandria, Louisiana. In 2020, he'd fled political violence and persecution in his native Cameroon and was afraid to go back. This was in 2020. He said officers took him out of his cell in front of the other detainees and put him in the RAP, leaving him for hours in view of the others as a warning to them not to speak up. I told him, "I can't breathe," the man said. He responded, "I don't care. I'm doing my job." So the next time you hear that as justification for what ICE is doing, or as a condemnation of people who dare to speak out against ICE, and maybe shout at them and take their pictures and demand to know what they're doing and demand to see their faces or see their names or their badge numbers, only to be told you're interfering with them doing their job. Well, their job sucks, and it has to end, and it has to be challenged, because this is not who we are. And even Joe Rogan gets this now. Even Marjorie Taylor Greene gets this now. My God. I never, in my wildest dreams, thought I'd be here on the radio saying, they're getting it. But they are. This is not who we are supposed to be. And no matter how you feel about immigration, you know, you may want everybody who is here illegally or without following every step that they were supposed to follow, you may want them all to face deportation. Face deportation. Fight it through the courts. If someone has been here 20 years or even 40 years or more, the solution is not to grab them in the middle of the night with a bunch of masked thugs, throw them in the back of a van, and send them to a country they've never been to before. That is not the solution. How can anybody believe that? If you're really, truly obsessed with making sure everybody meets the qualifications and has filled out all the right forms, well, then you go through a process. You give them a chance to speak their mind, their case. But maybe, you know, those people who have raised families here and have a history and are as American as you or me, in spirit certainly, maybe for those people, we don't act like this. They've proven themselves. You know, I happen to think, if you walk from somewhere in Central America to the border of the United States, I think you've earned citizenship at that point. I mean, why are any of us citizens? We're citizens because our parents were citizens. Why are they citizens? Because maybe their parents immigrated here, not facing anywhere near the same kind of challenges immigrants are facing now. But they got in. So because they got in, you got in. Because you got in, your children will get in. And so on and so on. But it doesn't prove that you're worthy of being a citizen. What are the measurements? Do you have to be of a certain caliber? Do you have to know certain things, score a certain level on the test? Everybody wants the same thing. Everybody wants freedom. Everybody wants an opportunity. And when did we stop giving that to people? You know, the Statue of Liberty, it's there for a reason. It's there to reach out to those people who see it for the first time. Assuming they're coming by boat, that is. And it's inspirational. It means something even to us who have been here all our lives. And I fear we've just lost sight of what it actually means. with all the vindictiveness and hatred and fear and ignorance. So regardless of where you stand on the immigration policy, surely you can see that this is not who we are. And what is going on is unacceptable and unforgivable. You know, there's a whole lot of veterans now facing federal charges after protesting ICE sweeps as well as Trump's National Guard deployments. The Justice Department, Trump's Justice Department, that is, claims the veterans were violent. U.S. military veterans increasingly face arrest and injury amid protests over Trump's deportation campaign and his push to deploy National Guard members to an ever-widening number of American cities, invariably run by Democrats. The Guardian has identified 8 instances where military veterans have been prosecuted or sought damages after being detained by federal agents. Latest incident occurred in Broadview outside Chicago. What's happening in Chicago lately? Where 70-year-old Air Force veteran Dana Briggs was charged with felony assault on a federal officer on the 29th of September. A widely shared video on social media shows a masked U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent advance on and knock over the elderly veteran during a protest during an ICE detention center. Federal prosecutors claim Briggs committed assault when he made physical contact with an agent's arm while the agent attempted to extend the safety perimeter. So when the agent knocked him over, was that the contact that they're talking about? I'm looking at a picture of this guy right now, and it just seems incomprehensible to me that he could assault anybody. But the definition of assault is rather wide. You know, if you tap somebody on the shoulder, that can be considered assault if somebody is particularly touchy. Anyway, Briggs pleaded not guilty. We'll see what happens with that case. Jose Vasquez is a former U.S. Army Staff Sergeant, Executive Director of the Progressive Veterans Organization Common Defense, which counts Briggs as a member. He said veterans like Briggs have stood up at ICE protests and faced arrest because we recognize a pattern of state-sanctioned abuse. Another veteran, John Cerrone, was arrested while protesting outside the Broadview ICE detention facility the day before Briggs. A social media video shows a group of masked agents. It's called the masked thugs. That's what they are. That's what we do when they're in Russia, right? How is it different? When they tackled the 35-year-old Marine Corps veteran who served as a combat infantryman in Afghanistan as tear gas floated in the air. Yeah, your service means nothing. It means nothing to these people. Cerrone says he was held for 9 hours at the Broadview facility, alone in a cell with walls covered by blood, hair, and mucus. He says that while he was behind bars, he was visited by an ICE agent who boasted that he had shot Cerrone in the head with rubber bullets and exclaimed, "Where is that pussy?" Their conduct was completely unprofessional in my experience in combat infantry. Even in Afghanistan, we had very clear rules of engagement. The conduct of these agents was such that if it occurred in Afghanistan, they would be removed from the front line. They would be court-martialed. And here, you don't even know who they are. Cerrone was released after receiving a citation for exhibiting disorderly conduct on federal property, a misdemeanor under federal law which he plans to contest. White House spokesperson Abigail Jackson said the administration was committed to finding out what happened and issued her apologies for the way that... No, of course that didn't happen. What am I thinking? I keep lapsing to fantasy land. No. What she said was, anyone who assaults or otherwise harms law enforcement officers will be held accountable to the fullest extent of the law. In a brief reply to questions from The Guardian, a Department of Justice spokesperson, or BOT, however you wish to view it, said, under this administration, we follow the law and have a one-tier system of justice, and this Department of Justice will relentlessly uphold the rule of law to protect our nation. Meanwhile, Vasquez from Common Defense said, what drives so many veterans into action is not only the injustice faced by immigrants and protesters, but also the larger threat to democracy rooted in government brutality and militarization. The disturbing escalation and arrests and violence signals that the basic freedoms we once swore to protect are under attack. Folks, you've heard a lot of good things about Trump this week because of what happened in the Middle East. And I'm not one to take away credit where credit is due. Let's put that aside for a moment, what we have talked about up until now. That is what cannot stand. That is what needs to be challenged. That is why I hope we see more veterans than ever at the No Kings rallies throughout the country this Saturday. And be prepared for all kinds of pushback, all kinds of lies that this administration will try and spread. Last time this happened, what was it, June? It was the most peaceful series of gatherings I think many of us have ever experienced. Millions, literally millions of people took to the streets. We need to do that more often. We need to feel good about where we stand a lot more frequently than what we have been seeing. It's empowering. It's a way of realizing that you're not alone. It's a way to basically come to terms with what it is we're facing rather than just accept it day after day. We're in a situation now where the government is non-functioning. It's literally closed. And I happen to think that is the right movement to make. When you're faced with a situation that is completely unacceptable and nothing you do matters, well, you have to do something. And if the only thing Democrats can do right now is stand in the way of anything being accomplished, then that is what they have to do. In this particular case, we're talking about healthcare premiums. You know, I was looking at what will change. And, you know, this is coming from non-biased sources. This is what's going to happen. This is what the insurance companies are saying. This is what the marketplace is saying. If you get Obamacare, if you pay around $200 a month, you can expect to pay $600 a month next year. And that is what the Democrats are fighting for, to prevent that from happening. While trillions are being given out to the richest people in the world, while so much is being wasted and so much else is being cut, this is unacceptable. This is something that needs to be stood up to. And that's what this is all about. That's what No King's Day is about. That's what shutting down the government is about. That's what the ICE protests are about. You do what you can. But you always go home at night feeling proud of what you've done. Realizing you can do more, but realizing that what you've done is the right thing. Now, okay, let's go to the Middle East, just for the fun of it. So, peace, huh? Okay, all right. You know, I'm even willing to say that Trump could pull this off. Because sometimes, it takes simple phrases, you know. It takes the least qualified people to make people come to their senses. For instance, let's say you're a couple of parents arguing back and forth, shouting, not hearing each other, and your little five-year-old suddenly says, "Shut up!" Well, that gets your attention, doesn't it? That makes you think about what it is you're doing. And while this five-year-old can't possibly understand what it is you're arguing about, maybe he gets you to take a good look at yourself and say, "Boy, we're not setting a good example, are we? We need to look at what we're doing. Let's calm it down a little bit." That's my theory as to what's going on right now. Because Trump was able to get Israel to stop bombing the Palestinians, to stop killing so many people. He was able to get Hamas to give back the remaining hostages, living and dead. And that is an accomplishment. There is no question about that. Whether it's a Nobel Peace Prize accomplishment, not for me to say. Thank God. But it has to be acknowledged that, yes, we got to this stage, but this is the simple part of the whole thing. You know, it's a huge accomplishment, no question about that. It's great that the hostages are finally released. They should have been released ages ago. It's a very complicated situation. And if you watch Trump's various speeches yesterday, you'll realize how little he understands about the region. But you know what? Again, five-year-old, you don't have to understand everything. You just have to be able to tell people to shut up and get them shocked into doing something different. Okay, and that's where we are right now. But where do you think we're going to be next week, next month? Hell, even a couple of days from now. We don't know because it's a very simplistic plan right now. Right now it's Israel, you stop. Hamas, you stop. And do you really think all of a sudden everyone's going to start getting along? I don't think so. I don't think that's going to work. But it served a purpose. It at least got people to do something. And there's no question that that's a good thing for the people involved. But my worry is, okay, so what happens when things start going wrong, as they inevitably will be, probably in the very near future? Yeah. Have we thought about that? Not sure we have. Not sure we really have. And that's what we'll be focusing on in the weeks ahead. Yeah, he could have done a very good thing here, but you need a lot of knowledge and professionalism to follow through and make sure it continues to work. And I don't know if he has those qualities. I certainly know Netanyahu, who didn't even attend the signing ceremony. He's not a big fan of this, and he's looking for any excuse to start bombing the Palestinians again. And I would not be surprised if that has even begun by now. I haven't looked at the news in a couple of hours, but it's certainly possible. Hey, we're out of time. We got to go. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. And I'll try to find out what happened to Kyle, and hopefully we'll hear his voice in the studio next week. Until then, stay safe and stay informed. Good night.
It started off a routine day. I got through the morning in the usual way. I caught the bus on time. Good morning, Mr. Driver, drive. As I sat inside my overcoat, I clutched my cane and pressed my nose against the foggy window.